Okay, so first of all, I want you to know where we lived. We went from Miami and we moved to the bush of Alaska in Prince William Sound. Actually, we lived at two different hatcheries. So those two hatcheries have no roads to town. There's no way to get to civilization except by plane that would land on the water. Or we thought maybe by boat. So we purchased a 21-foot aluminum boat because there are icebergs that float around that water. And we attempted to go to Whittier. We figured it would take 45 minutes to an hour, but it shouldn't be too bad. Well, we also thought if we could do this, we could go into town regularly and we didn't have to be cut off from the world. So we attempted this trip to a place called Decision Point. We didn't know that at the time. And the reason it's called that is because there's two waterways that come together, and those waterways are very powerful, and they stir up the water, and the water is very violent there. Once we hit that point, our boat was being bounced around so much, I thought for sure we would die, and my daughter almost flew out of the boat, so I grabbed her. We were able to make it into Whittier, but we decided we would go back, but never make that trip again. So the next 6 years, we were in remote Alaska with only transportation into town once a year when a float plane would land on the water and come to shore. At the one hatchery, the pilot would get out of the boat and row the plane up to shore. At the other hatchery, he couldn't make it up to shore, so he would stop at a dock where we would get in a John boat and then go into shore. At these hatcheries, there were nine permanent people living there. We made up four of those nine people. And we really didn't associate much with them because they were workers with my husband, and you know, they were men. So my children and I didn't have much in common with them. So for the most part, we were alone. And when we went into town once a year, my husband would stay back at the bush because he preferred that. So it would just be the kids and I. So once a year, a plane would come for us. And we would tell the pilot after he dropped us off, we'll see you in a year. We could pre-schedule the flight, but that didn't mean they'd actually come that day. The kids and I would pack up our stuff for our 2-week trip to Anchorage, and we would get dressed up for it, and we'd have our bags ready, and we'd sit at our house, and we would wait to hear the plane. Sometimes it didn't come that day. And we'd do the same thing the next day and get prepared, and it wouldn't come the next day or the next day. And the reason being is because the weather up there, whether it's winter or summer, can be very, very bad, and it can be very difficult to fly. Sometimes they would get close to us, and they would call us on our ship-to-shore radio, which was like a CB radio, and they would ask us, "What's the ceiling?" Meaning, how high up could we see from shore? And what's the distance? How far out in the water could we see? They wanted to make sure they could make a safe landing. If we didn't give them the right answer, they would turn around. Sometimes we would wait up to a week till we were able to get on that plane to go into town. And the kids and I would rent a car and a hotel room, and we would go shopping for clothes, for food, for any of our needs, and see the doctor and dentist once a year. I tried to schedule the trip around the Iditarod and the fur rendezvous so that we'd have a little entertainment. The Iditarod was a fake start of the Iditarod, but we'd get to see that. And then the fur rendezvous was when natives would come together and sell some of their crafts. Other than that, we spent the 6 years out in the bush. Out in the bush, we had no television, no radio. There were no radio stations to pick up on. We had no telephone. There were no cell towers out there. Our best hope to reach anybody was that ship-to-shore radio, where we could contact a ship, who could contact another ship, who could contact another ship, until somebody finally got the message to shore. We did have a couple emergencies where we did need to use that. Every now and then, a cruise ship would come by the inlet, way out, and we could get in the boat and we could ride out to the inlet and watch the humpback whales, the otters, the sea lions, and see these cruise ships. And it was funny because the cruise ships, often people would be on the side with their binoculars looking at us, pointing at us. I figured they were all saying, "Look at the natives." When we would go for hikes, We often would go places where I would stand there and think, I'll bet you no other human being has ever stood in this spot before. It was very, very interesting. But also, it was very, very dangerous. We used to tell people, this is Alaska, and it will kill you. So if you went for a hike, you needed to go with somebody. You needed to carry bear mace. Yes, there is such a thing. It's huge. You needed to tell exactly where you thought you were going to walk and exactly when you thought you were going to get back. If you didn't get back on time, the search party would begin to gather within 10 minutes, and within 15 minutes, we would set off to search for you. So this was a very remote and dangerous life. The winters were very, very harsh. Sometimes we would have storms where we would get 1 to 2 feet of snow an hour. As you can see in this picture with this airplane, the plane had landed, but the snow came in too fast and they weren't able to leave. They had to continually take the snow off of the plane so that it wouldn't crush it. Speaking of crushing it, we had to continually take the snow off of our boat as well so it wouldn't get crushed in. And in the wintertime, the snow would get so heavy on our roof. And even though our roof was diagonal and the snow would slide off, the snow would actually get to the height of the roof. And then we would have to take our only vehicle, well, the one besides the boat, which was a front loader. And we'd have to remove the snow from the front of the house and drop the snow into the ocean. That way, more snow could shed off of our roof. That way, the roof would not crush in on us. The winters lasted very long. In fact, the snow wouldn't be all melted until July, and then it would start up again, sometimes as early as September, but always by October. And when it was summertime, the warmest it ever got that I remember was 65 degrees. To us, that was warm because we had acclimated. We didn't get to see the sun much in the wintertime. In fact, at the first hatchery, we never got to see the sun in the wintertime until the end of February. Then we would climb up the mountain behind us and we would wait. And then the sun would pop up, but not enough to come to where our house was. That's why we had to climb the mountain. And when the sun would pop up, we would quickly take off our coat and our fleece jacket so that we could feel the sun on our arms. It felt so good, but it would only last a couple minutes. And then we'd quickly throw our clothes back on and walk back down the mountain. That mountain that we would walk up had a big lake, and that lake is where we got our water. And the water would come down a huge pipeline, and it would come down and turn a turbine, which is where we received our electricity from. And we drank that water. So we had electricity and we had indoor plumbing. We lived in what was called the Cush Bush because we had those niceties. But we did not have other niceties. Of course, we had no stores, no restaurants, no bakeries. No church. We were the church. We had no school. We had to become the school. There was no newspaper. We actually made our own newspaper. We made do with what we could. Now, in preparation for this trip, I had to make sure that I was extremely thorough. First of all, we had to sell our house, our car, and all our belongings. And then when I entered Anchorage, I then started purchasing things that we needed to live with. And I couldn't make a mistake because our lives depended on it. I had to make sure I was extremely thorough with the foods, with the clothes, with medications, with even dental tools. I had to try to think of everything, haircutting kits. So we lived out there in the wilderness, and sometimes there were things where I would have forgotten. Fortunately, none of them were life-threatening, but I learned how to improvise. I learned how to, okay, so I don't have this spice that I really want, but how can I make something similar to that? Okay, so this thing broke. How can we jury-rig it, or how can we use something else in its place? We had to rely on ourselves. We couldn't just run to the store. So when I heard about this quarantine, I immediately thought, you know, this is going to be easy. I've done this before. This won't be a problem for my kids either. They've done this before. And so I immediately started preparing thoroughly. I prepared for probably 3 months. I ran through the house and made sure I basically took a list of everything we had when it came to food, and then made a list of groceries that I'd want, things that I wouldn't have to rely on electricity if we were to lose it, because that did occasionally happen in Alaska. One time our pipeline broke and we went without electric for about a week. And we couldn't shower either. So I started hearing people talk about the quarantine and grumbling about it. And I thought, you know, I'd really like to encourage others as well. I'd really like you to learn that you can have fun. For one thing, on the positive note, you're not doing it for 6 years. Hopefully, it won't even be 6 months. And I know it came on you awfully suddenly, so you weren't able to prepare like I was. But now you can prepare. I mean, I don't know how much longer it's going to be. Take your best guess. Be very thorough. Write out a plan. Go to the store so that you don't have to go to the store very often. We had a great time. We would clown around. We would do whatever we wanted to. Sometimes we'd take our laundry and make outfits. We would make up our own games. And if we didn't like the rules, we'd change the rules and just keep changing it until it became a perfect game that we loved. We did our own homeschooling. Now, this was my first time homeschooling. I had taken my son out of public school, so I had prepared to continue where he had left off. But what I found out was he wasn't at the level where he should have been. Somehow he had gotten lost in the school system. So instead of forcibly continuing where I felt we were supposed to be, I stepped back and went back a grade or two and figured out where he had gotten lost. And I helped to build his foundation until he was able to not only get up to the level where he was supposed to be, but exceed it. It actually got to the point to where we did 2 school years a year. After we left the wilderness, he graduated at the age of 16, and he was able to begin college. He was a test case, the first homeschool student in the Tri-County Community College. After he went there, they accepted and opened up to all homeschool students, so that was wonderful. When I was homeschooling him, my youngest said, "Mommy, I want to go to school too." So, okay. I sat her on one side of the table, and she learned preschool while my son was learning his classes. And then we had a fake graduation. Actually, I shouldn't really call it fake. It was real. What we did was real. It just wasn't the real that other people are used to. We made a certificate and wrapped it up and would hand it to them when they graduated at the end of the school year. We learned how to do everything ourselves. We learned to rely on ourselves. You guys see all these DIY TV shows? Well, you're really DIY when you're out in the wilderness of Alaska. We made our own cakes. We couldn't go to a bakery, as you can see from that cake. No, I did not design that. My youngest did. But it didn't matter. We weren't doing these things for other people to see. We were doing these things for ourselves so that we could still have a normal life, even though it wasn't the normal we used to know. So we used to do things like put up tents in our living room and instead of tenting outside, because in the wintertime, there was no way you could. The snow was way too deep. And in the summertime, it was too muddy. And we did have a lot of bear around. So we put the tent in our living room and then we'd tell everybody, okay, we're going to go camping starting at 6 o'clock. Whatever you need to go camping, you get and you bring it here. But by 6 o'clock, you're stuck here in the living room. In our campground. So whatever clothes you bring, food you bring, pillows, blankets, whatever, that's it. You could only leave the tent to go to the restroom until we were finished camping, and you'd bring games. So you just make up whatever you need to or whatever you want to. Another thing that we did was we all decided to learn sign language. So we learned sign language so that we could communicate with each other at long distances so we wouldn't have to holler. This ended up being a great benefit when we left and came into civilization. We found that we were able to communicate to each other at long distances, like at airports, like if there was a glass door between us, at stores, and even at church when we're not supposed to talk, we could sign to each other. My kids still sign today. And I thought about that. I thought, wouldn't this be great if Janet Fleming decided to learn another language. Can you imagine if after the quarantine we came back and Janet Fleming became known as also bilingual? I think that would be awesome. Don't waste this precious time. Enjoy it, learn, and grow. We'd make our own decorations. I thought I had brought our decorations, but they did not make it to Alaska. So when the holidays came, we were forced to make our own. There again, you improvise. And I still have those decorations and still use them today. Like I said, we made our newspaper, which became a memorabilia. It was just for us, but then we could share it with family later. We couldn't communicate with the outside world. Once a year when we would fly into town, I'd call my parents and they would say, "Oh, we're so glad to hear from you. We're glad to know you guys are still alive and well. We heard there were earthquakes up there." "Mom, there's always earthquakes up here." We would do earthquake drills in our house. But the point I'm trying to get across from you is to you is that you might not be able to go visit with your family, and you might not be able to hang out with your friends, but you still can communicate with them much more than once a year. You don't have to worry about each other. Just be in contact and know that sometime this time will pass. So make the absolute best of it. That's what we did. We knew sometime this would pass. There were lots of similarities between what we were doing and the quarantine. For instance, like I said, we couldn't just go wherever we wanted to. And when we went out, we did wear masks. In the wintertime, we wore a mask because it was so bitter cold. And in the summer, we wore a mask because there were so many bugs. One time I remember, I did not wear my screened mask in the summertime. I was out there standing and laughing, and there were all these flies all around. And I laughed real hard one time. I went, there was a fly that had been flying by. And when I went, that fly went straight back my throat and down. I was in shock. I'm like, oh my goodness, I didn't know who to feel more sorry for, me or the fly. He was just flying along, minding his own business. I have so many stories I could tell. I'm afraid I don't have a lot of time to do that, but I really just wanted to encourage you all. This is not going to go on forever. Make the absolute best of this. Let me see. I had lessons learned. You can survive for long periods of time in isolation if you plan ahead. I understand that you didn't have time to plan ahead, and we might still be this way for another month or two. You can plan now. Be thorough. You do not need to go out to the store often. In fact, we did not go into town except once a year, as I've said repeatedly. And guess what? We never caught a cold or the flu for those 6 years. We were never sick. So it was easy to live without a doctor. If your kids struggle in school, find out why they're struggling. Go back to where they got lost. It will make life easier on both of you, and it will give them a great advantage when they do go back to public school. Go to great lengths to stay healthy. I'm going to jump in here and tell you a story about my son. When we first moved there, within about a month, he became very, very depressed, and that depression lasted for about 9 months. I thought it was because we left Miami, where we had tons of things to do. I thought it was because he didn't have friends anymore or family, and I felt so sorry for him. I didn't know he was suffering from SAD, seasonal affective disorder. This comes from the lack of sunlight, from the lack of natural vitamin D. I wish I would have known then what I know now. I know that many of us are staying inside, and we're not getting the kind of sunlight that we used to. I ask you to please contact your doctor. Ask he or she what you can do, what he or she would prefer, what vitamins you should take, so that you can avoid getting SAD. I think that this is possibly something that we'll find several people are going through that's not normal for down here, but definitely normal for Alaska and colder regions. Also, make sure you exercise. I think probably many of you have Fitbits and you realize you're not getting the steps you used to get. It's important to exercise. So ask your doctor about that too, please. Use this opportunity to learn something new. Maybe you can learn something that would help at work. Maybe you could learn something as a family that will help you bond like we did with our sign language. And also keep in mind, everybody does need their own space. You guys are stuck in houses. Many of you aren't alone. Many of you have relatives or even pets, and you're all crammed in the same space all the time. Make sure everybody has their own room if possible. And if not possible, make sure they get time to be alone, maybe for an hour or two. Okay, we're not going to interrupt you. You go ahead in that room. Mostly, I want you all to have fun, make memories, take pictures, write a diary, write a newspaper, and let's talk about this later when we get back together. Thank you.